good morning. I'd really like to thank the moderators, Dr. Allen, Dr. Kuby, for asking me to be involved with this great panel of speakers. And I'd like to thank the college for the honor of presenting in this venue to all of you. So I was charged with small pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors, and really, how should we manage these? I have no financial disclosures. So really, how big of a problem is this? I mean, we always learn that panin or peanut are actually quite rare. And the reality is, as we've heard, we're finding them just every time we look for them. So this is a patient of mine that was getting surveillance imaging 10 years after a prostate cancer, but finally had triphasic imaging done. And, you know, small incidental arterial enhancing lesion can be found in the tail. Or this is a young lady with a Hammudi tumor. We're working up in the body of the pancreas. And on triphasic imaging, a 2-centimeter peanut's found in the head of the pancreas. Or on our patients with MEN1, this is just one single cut from this patient where you can see multiple neuroendocrine tumors in the tail. And we know this is just the tip of the iceberg for these MEN1 or hereditary patients where there are innumerable microscopic neuroendocrine tumors usually throughout the gland. And really the images that, the issues that our patients are getting multiple different kinds of imaging. So this was an MRI in a patient of mine where there's an obvious lesion in the head. Before you knew it in the community, the EUS was already done, and there's a beautiful picture that was sent by the referring gastroenterologist. And then the DOTATATE PET is already scheduled, and we have highly specific newer imaging that wasn't available just 10 years ago that can even show uptake in a local regional lymph node. And so as a result of this higher quality, more specific imaging, like DOTATATE PET in the U.S., the incidence is estimated to have increased almost 700% in just the last two decades. Now, the older autopsy studies estimated 3% incidence, but if you look at the glands that were actually serially sectioned, there was up to 10% incidence in these glands. So though they only represent less than 2% of all pancreas tumors, practically, in our offices, these are going to represent up to 30% of the tumors that we're seeing and evaluating based on the increased incidence. And really, the issues when determining on who we should intervene on can fall into data that looks at whether they're functional, grade, and then I'll focus mostly on size and emerging diagnostics. I'm not going to spend too much time on the functional versus non-functional. This is a whole separate topic, but really for the sporadic functional tumors, so not the MEN1 or VHL patients, if the endocrine symptoms can be controlled, those patients should go on to surgical resection because the morbidity of the endocrine secretion is often greater than the risk of the surgery. Now, as far as grade, it's worth mentioning this because we know that the vast majority of these tumors are not being biopsied before they go for surgical resection. And so we are running into this issue of high-grade neuroendocrine tumors, which are really a complete different tumor than low-grade neuroendocrine tumors. In fact, they more biologically will resemble a more aggressive non-small lung cancer than a neuroendocrine tumor. And so as a result, the majority of these will have metastasis at presentation, very poor survival in comparison. If they're localized, there's still a role for surgery, but in combination with systemic therapy. And if they're metastatic, this greatly differs from the well-differentiated or grade 1 tumors that we're going to be talking about, because for the low-grade tumors, we still talk about debulking surgery, metastasectomy, et cetera. But in the high-grade setting, there really is no role for that. These patients should be treated with systemic therapy. So then we'll talk mostly about size. This is what we've been focusing on in the literature for the last few decades. And so to step back, we will ask ourselves, what do the guidelines tell us to do? If we look up on UpToDate or wherever, what are their guidelines telling us? So we'll start with North American NANETS. And basically, they tell us that they recommend resection. There's some patients that can be observed in, but there's really no specific size cutoffs to help tell you who you should observe and who you should resect. If you go across the pond to look at the ESMO, the European Society Medical Oncology recommendations, they'll tell us, you know, consider curative surgery depending on the tumor size, but they leave that tumor size up to the surgeon. So we're really left to believe that any of these are open game. Now, ENETS has been a little bit more specific and consistent, and these guidelines have been consistent over a decade at this point. And it really introduces this concept of surveillance of smaller, less than 2 centimeter tumors, and really looking at the surgical risk to benefit ratio, because there are patients with asymptomatic, specifically non-functional PanETs, for which surveillance is a good option, for example, significant comorbidities or advanced age. Now, the majority of people in this country will turn to NCCN to help determine how they should manage lesions. And if you look up small, less than 2 centimeter tumors, one option would be observation in select cases, which the small footnote in 7-point font at the bottom of, will tell you that's for less than 1 centimeter tumors. Or you can denucleate them, or you can perform a distal pancreatectomy, or you can perform a Whipple procedure. And so really, everything is available within our guidelines for how to manage these patients. So are these guidelines really sufficient to help us guide management of small incidental pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors? So last year at the AHPBA, we had a consensus conference to help answer the question of how we should manage these small lesions. And if you survey the audience of those that were present at this consensus conference, 82% of HPB surgeons feel that the current guidelines are not sufficient to help guide our practice, and 96% of the surgeons would like more primary data to help guide those decisions. And the issue is that none of these consensus guidelines are based on level one data. There really is no level one data, and they're really just expert opinion, which is, in most cases, a roundtable discussion of people that have reviewed the data or are considered experts in the field. And so it was questioned for this consensus conference whether there could be a more rigorous way of reaching a consensus using that same primary data. And so many in this audience are familiar with something called the Delphi method. This was actually developed during the Cold War to help forecast the impact of technology on warfare for the military. And the goal of this method is to arrive at something closer to an expert consensus through a reiterative process of questionnaires and discussion. And so when the Delphi process was used for these small neuroendocrine tumors, the following consensus were presented, and this manuscript is now in press. Resection was recommended for tumors greater than 2 centimeters. Resection is not recommended for tumors less than 1 centimeter. However, no consensus was reached for management of tumors between 1 to 2 centimeters. So this is where we are. Is this really a drop mic, though? I mean, we still don't know exactly what to do with those 1 to 2 centimeter tumors. And so to help us manage these patients, we have to pull back the curtain and get into the weeds a little bit of the primary data, that at least which exists, and look at how size is associated with grade, metastasis, and survival. And as you see, most of the data is retrospective or observational with a smattering of national databases. And the bottom line is that the vast majority of small tumors will be grade 1, say greater than 80%. And the vast majority of small tumors will be node negative, almost close to 90%. Now, there was one study through SEER that looked at 0 to 2 centimeter tumors. And it turns out with increasing size from 0 to 2, at least in this one retrospective study, increasing size wasn't predictive of node positivity. And it follows then that the risk of metastasis from these small tumors is also very low, 0% in most of the studies, and only up to 14% in observational group of smaller retrospective series. And so we know that these tumors will have a low risk of nodal mets, they'll mostly be well differentiated, and a low risk of distant mets, but how does that actually correlate with survival? And the largest study to look at this was done by Marshall Baker, where he looked at the NCDB at smaller tumors, and it turns out that patients that were resected actually seemed to have an association with improved overall survival for these small tumors. And in fact, when the same question was asked in a meta-analysis looking at all the available literature, it came to the same conclusion, that resection of small tumors seemed associated with overall survival. But that's not really the issue, is it? Because overall survival in these patients where recurrence may not happen for decades, and this can be confounded by comorbidities, et cetera, really we want to look at disease-specific survival. So the Verona group looked at their patients that were resected or observed, and similar to that NCDB study, overall survival was excellent, But if you look only at the subset of patients at an incidental panin, the disease-specific survival was in fact 100%. And in this larger study done by Peter Allen at Memorial, over 400 patients were either observed or surveyed or resected. And they found no difference in overall survival with or without resection. But very importantly, there was 100% disease-specific survival in both groups. And these went up to 3 centimeter tumors. So again, looking at some of the data, that which exists, it appears that disease-specific survival is actually excellent, and it approaches 100% in many of the studies. But there's a possible trend towards worse disease-specific survival as size increases more than 1 centimeter, but only when those patients are followed out for a decade or more. So that leaves us with then wondering about this 1 to 2 centimeter range. How should we handle these? The Mass General group looked at a cutoff of 1.5 centimeters and found that this could discriminate survival, but all-cause mortality and not disease-specific. And the French multicenter study asked, is there a cutoff that can differentiate malignant from non-malignant pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors? And their cutoff came out on an ROC curve to 1.7 centimeters. But at what cost does this incremental improvement come? There was no difference in that study in disease-free survival. 13% of the Whipple procedures in that study died. 32% of the fistula were grade C, and then there were the smattering of complications that occur with massive pancreatic resection. So though the occasional small malignant tumor may be identified and resected, this really comes at a significant cost, and anyone that does pancreatic surgery is familiar and does not take that lightly. And so when we're stuck with these scans of incidental small 1 to 2 centimeter pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors in the tail of the pancreas, this is really a moment where we sit and we reflect and we think, okay, I know this is probably low grade, this is probably node negative, it's probably not going to impact disease-specific survival. If this patient's young, can they tolerate it? Can I nucleate it? Can I resect it? These are all the questions we have to ask, and this is why it's still the science and art of surgery within this group. And these are difficult decisions to make, but the vast majority of them, the data that exists tells us, can be safely followed. So how should we proceed then? The studies that I presented here and the data tells us that size is actually a very poor reflector of tumor biology, because there are going to be patients with small tumors that have a malignant histology. And this makes sense, right? Because after all, at some point in time, every malignant tumor started at less than 2 centimeters. So future risk assessment will likely be improved by molecular diagnostics, similar to what Dr. Ahmed was talking about with IPMN. And this is really being looked at very closely. Candidate biomarkers are being identified. A few examples are mutations in the MEN1 gene for even in sporadic tumors, or protein loss of DAX being associated with malignancy. And multi-analyte biosignatures of candidate genes and proteins are currently being created, both from the tissue, from serum, and a burgeoning field of circulating tumor cells are being analyzed. I'm going to show just one example, because I think this is the one that's the furthest ahead. There's something called the NET test, which was developed by Irving Modlin at Yale. And basically, from whole blood, mRNA can be isolated very easily. And using a 51-marker gene panel, the risk of malignant behavior of a small PNET can be estimated as low, intermediate, or high. And when this test was used on a validation set of about 100 patients throughout the U.S., there was a greater than 80% accuracy or concordance for determining that tumor's behavior as either low risk or high risk. And in fact, it could differentiate progression-free survival into 3 tiers of low, intermediate, or high progression-free survival. So really, I think this is going to be the next step to help us manage these small tumors. Is we're stuck in all these different guidelines, and we're looking at size and grade and function, location, and hopefully the next step will be to integrate these different guidelines across the different countries by using some of these molecular markers. I hope if you're ever in Chicago, you please come by and say hello, and I thank you for your very kind attention.